Okay, everybody, welcome to the Freedom Fiends live radio show. It is Sunday, August 11th. I'm Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. How are you doing there, Michael?
I am good, and I am broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Yeah, and we got a couple announcements here before we bring on our wonderful guest. Let's see. Breaking Bad starts tonight. Yay.
Yeah, man. I watched up to episode 7 of season 5, and I'm just appalled at the fall of Walt and how horrible of a person he's becoming. I don't know if he's becoming a horrible person, but he's doing some horrible things, and I guess that's the true essence of great drama, is watching a fall from on high.
Well, the show's not called Breaking Good.
Yeah, that's true.
And our button contest has a winner. I wrote a 5,600 word article on Talkers Magazine about how to make your show popular 150 years in the future. And I was really proud of my proofreading. And I said, I'll bet tops there's one typo in the 5,600 words on that. And I had a contest of win some fiends buttons if you can find even one typo. And only one person found one typo. And it was the word hoarding. Which is, I spelled it H-O-R-D-I-N-G, and it's spelled, when meaning to squirrel away, it's H-O-A-R-D-I-N-G.
Yes.
Horde is like a invading force of, people from somewhere else. Foreigners.
Well, maybe you meant it like that.
No, I didn't. I don't think. I said MP3s should not be hoarded away like a finite resource. We got a guest here. It's Amanda Billyrock. How you doing, Amanda?
I'm good. How are you?
We're nifty, man. Didn't you just move to New Hampshire?
2 nights ago.
From where?
Utah.
Well, where in Utah?
Salt Lake City area.
Cool. Yeah, I'm in Wyoming. That's our Mormon neighbors to the south. There.
Yeah, I was born in Salt Lake. Lived there till I was 8. My dad still lives there. What part of the area are you from?
Sugar House most recently.
Okay. Yeah, my family's down in Draper. Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, what made you want to leave the beautiful mountains of Salt Lake City for the cold winters of New Hampshire?
Well, I mean, Salt Lake City has just as cold a winters as New Hampshire, if not colder, but to be a free stater.
Cool. I like the Free State Project in New Hampshire, and I'm not trying to sell you on something else, but I'm curious, geographically, why didn't you pick Free State Wyoming when it's just a hop, skip, and a jump away from where you were?
I guess I wanted to go with the biggest, longest-lasting sort of thing.
Cool. What are the benefits of moving to New Hampshire for the Free State Project, for those who don't know? And we're on the radio today in Wyoming, so you could irk a bunch of people in Wyoming by giving a pitch for, or just, you don't need, it's not going to irk people. Just how are you finding New Hampshire, and what do people find there?
Well, I've been here for, I'm not even sure, 48 hours yet, so I wish I could give a more detailed report. But ever since I've been here, there's always something going on. There's always a group of free staters doing something somewhere, and everybody is always invited, and transportation is even provided to the bigger events. They have a huge bus and they come pick up at central locations. And it just seems like there's so many helping hands to be lent, and I've been welcomed by so many people. And in fact, this morning I went to church for the first time in like 6 years, and it was fantastic.
What kind of church?
The Church of the Sword. It's non-denominational, which is why I agreed to go. And they practice civil disobedience as a matter of church ritual. And more details maybe could be spilt in other venues, but let's just say it was a trip.
Huh. How'd you get there? Covered wagon? Pulled by hamsters? How does one get to New Hampshire?
I couldn't afford as many hamsters as it would have taken, so I just flew.
Yeah, it is cheaper these days. What do you got there, Nima?
Well, I just wanted to say, Michael, it seems kind of obvious she would choose New Hampshire because she's under 40 and probably likes to have fun.
Ooh!
Wyoming, no offense to Wyoming, 40. Free State.
I'm over 40 and I hate fun.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm not agreeing with you about that's why people would choose New Hampshire over Wyoming, but I'm not a member of Free State Wyoming. I have friends who are. Some really good friends.
Well, it's not a judgment call. It's just different strokes for different folks. And yeah. I feel like the Free Staters in Wyoming like to have lots of land and be left alone and maybe go visit each other once a year for some kind of jamboree or Liberty Fest or something. but yeah, New Hampshire, I mean, everything's all about, it's almost seems like it's a big party all the time. I guess you've only been there for 48 hours, but is that kind of what drew you there is fellowship with people who share the same values as you?
Absolutely. I want to be among people who have my back when the state tries to encroach.
And have your back. Are you planning on joining up the cause and doing some good civil disobedience? I mean, is that kind of one of the goals here?
I wish that civil disobedience were the only time you had to worry about state assault. But even when you're not being civilly disobedient, the cops are still going to mess with you. I've been called by many people a cop magnet. And so I really don't like to strike out on my own by myself if it's not necessary.
Well, do tell. I mean, did you have some run-ins with the law over there in Salt Lake City?
Absolutely. On more than one occasion. And they were all unwarranted, unconstitutional, unjust. I was arrested. I was in cuffs. And yeah, I mean, when you run into someone with a monopoly on power who has a strange ego condition, when you prove yourself not to be a bootlicker, they're not very happy about that.
What would you like to see in LibPair, which is what we call Libertarian Paradise, if it were LibPair, what do you think, if anything, would take the place of police and what would it look like and how would it work?
Well, certainly you could have private police. And the reason that it would be far superior to what we have now is because any company that has to operate with competition is going to be superior to a monopoly. You know, like when cops literally kill people or kill people's animals, the worst that would maybe happen is that they go on a paid vacation while things are being investigated and reported by the press. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you had competing private police companies, if somebody kills a customer or kills a customer's dog, that person is over.
Okay, I'm in agreement with you that I think that a monopoly of force that's universal and there's no alternative is a bad thing. But I want to ask more actually how it would work questions. And if you don't want to answer them, that's fine. I mean, when people say to me, like, well, who would build the roads if there wasn't a giant system to steal money and build the roads? And my answer is kind of like, hey, man, I'm not the Libertarian Central Planner. I don't have the answer for that. And there's people who do it a lot better than me, and I can point you to them. And there's people who are like doctorate level thinkers about this, and I'm not one of them. But I like to run stuff by people. In a world where there wasn't a government monopoly on force and you had competing private police agencies, let me give you a couple scenarios and ask how you think it could be worked out without aggression. Like, let's say you and your neighbors have a you contract with a private security firm. Another neighbor contracts with his private security firm. And let's say somebody in security firm A does something that really irks, you know, person from security who's a customer of security firm B. And that, you know, like, let's say person B steals from person A. Person A's security firm comes over and says, we're investigating a report that you stole something. We have a witness. And person B just says, get off my property, and points a gun at him. What then? That's my question.
Yeah, that's actually a common question. And so
I am common. Really, thank you.
Well, you have to look at, say, someone is building a house with a general contractor, and say the Siders the Siders accuse, say, the cement layers of stealing a piece of equipment, right? So do the cement layers and siders go to war with one another? No, they don't, because they have a contract with the general contractor ahead of time that lays out what will happen in case of a conflict. And so in the free society, if there were in fact conflicts between competing security companies, it would be in all of their best interests to lay out the process for dispute resolution in their contract ahead of time. And there would certainly be firms that specialized in dispute resolutions between security firms. Right. That's the beauty of contract. We don't have to be, you know, flapping out in the wind like, you know, crazy, scared people who don't know what they're doing. Like, no, you look at how markets function even now. Contract takes care of this. And what's more, war, like battle, violence, is all really, really expensive. I mean, can you imagine what it would look like if the Siders Union actually took up arms against the cement layers? Like, that just doesn't happen. That's not good business. That's not how you keep customers.
Yeah, there's not money for it in the budget. And you see this kind of dispute resolution. I mean, think of two people who get in a car wreck. Each of them has their own insurance. The insurance isn't there to give you a pass to go run and crash into other people's cars. You know, if you're still at fault, your two insurance companies will work out what the percentage of the fault is and proceed accordingly. So the same, it seems like the same thing can already happens in our society with the state. I feel like it would happen even more efficiently sans this third party of the state with their regulations and their actual guns being pointed at every party in our current situation.
I agree.
So what would happen in that private police force situation, though, if someone just said, no, get off my property, and pointed a weapon at them, said, I don't want to be a part of this. Go away.
Well,
I don't recognize
their company. Their company would say, hey, that's not in your contract. When you signed up with us, you agreed to dispute resolution, and we cease to be your security provider now. You're on your own, buddy.
It's kind of like outlawry. If you've agreed to abide by a certain law and then you reject your contract, you're no longer protected by that law. You're now an outlaw.
And we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends right after this message.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, Inoculation from Indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. 5 centuries after the first spaceflight, the stars remain beyond humanity's reach. So a mad scientist enlists the aid of a young technician, Nicole Orem, as they travel through the solar system, encountering the hazards of space and human treachery. Quantum Vibe, Volume 1, Nicole. Collects the first 400 strips of the epic sci-fi webcomic series, available now from the major online bookstores or direct from bigheadpress.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe.
It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity.
A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe.
There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity.
A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Freedom Fiends. Welcome back. I am Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in his windowless bunker.
Hello.
In Wyoming. And we've got somebody in another, quote, free state. We've got Amanda Billy Rock out in the great state of New Hampshire. How you doing, Amanda?
I'm so good.
So good. Good.
Excellent.
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 You're not too hungover from your praxing?
Hangover day was yesterday.
What is praxing? You said on your Facebook that you're hungover from praxing, and I looked it up on urbandictionaryforoldpeople.com, which is where I go for things like that, and it said it was like a combination of being drunk and high, but that wasn't what you're hungover on, right?
She was referring to praxology.
No.
What's that?
Praxology. Yeah. So praxology is used in Austrian economics, and it's the term that's been given to the study of human action and human behavior as it expresses itself in economics. So basically, it's to understand why people trade the way they do, or why they would choose not to trade, and how the division of labor works, and even game theory. So it's a social science, and lately on Facebook, some funny people have just taken to using the noun praxology as a verb. Like, the common phrase is, do you even prax, bro? And so I just find that to be amusing. So I thought I would just use the word myself.
Nice.
There's a band called Praxis. It's one of Bill Laswell's weird art projects.
I always wondered about that term praxeology, though. I guess it never quite stuck with me, because shouldn't that be what real economics is anyway? I mean, don't we already have the word economics to describe the study of human action and markets?
You know, you would think so. And maybe the reason the term came about is because the word economics has been so skewed that people think it actually means looking at graphs and numbers to talk about the GDP. Like, oh, yeah, great.
Well, I know that a lot of economists fancy themselves experts on everything. And I think if they really have an understanding of Austrian economics, they might, because Austrian economics is a study of all human interaction as related to value, exchanging hands. Whereas the other kind, the state kind of economics, is basically based on being people who are experts at things that are wrong. But a lot of economists write books on all other types of subjects and approach it with graphs and pie charts in a kind of economics kind of way.
Well, like we've said on the show before, there really is no such thing as macroeconomics, because every economic decision is based on synapses firing in a few in one individual's brain. You know, everything boils down to a single human choice, and then the other human on the other end of the transaction, their choice as well. So I could definitely see the need for the distinction. It's just, I guess it saddens me that there is one.
Yeah.
And it seems like mainstream economics was created to pay homage to the state's greatness.
Yes.
It's like they pulled these numbers out of the sky to talk about how amazing central planning is.
Yep.
It's like it has no other function.
Yes. Right, right. Like in 1984, when the news is talking about how chocolate rations have gone up and shoelace rations have gone up. They actually haven't, but it's nothing more than a pretty pillow talk to say to the public so that they'll feel like they're taken care of by their federal family.
There's a thing on 30.
That's a great analogy.
There's a thing on 30 Rock where Jack goes and works for the Department of Homeland Security, and he's like, you know, there's water dripping in the ceiling. And he's like, you have a leak in here. And he's like, They're like, no, we don't. We did a study. There's no leak.
Right. So
yeah, it's crazy to hear people bring up 1984, because I remember I first read it as a teenager and I thought, man, this is far-fetched. It's cool, but it's really far-fetched. You know, this Orwell sure had a wild imagination. And 10 years later, you know, as an adult who has learned to look at things in a different way, I think I'm so creeped out by how real that book is now in my life.
Yeah. It's actually selling a lot of copies now. It's almost back-to-back seller, but bestseller.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. When I was in high school, it struck me hard. And I thought, yeah, this is – this is where it could be going, but I actually wrote an essay on it in high school for some class, and I think my final sentence was, what Orwell's trying to do is allow us to learn from our mistakes, but they're not mistakes we've made yet. They're mistakes that will be made in the future. We can learn from them now because Orwell was such a great visionary and showed these problems that can arise from the state control. I guess I was wrong because it doesn't seem like enough people have learned the lesson.
Yeah, it's crazy because I remember making a video last year about how it seems like things with the state are always like opposite day. And remember in 1984, it's love is violence, truth is lies, war is peace, whatever. It's like that right. Every day now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bizarro world. We'll be back with more breaking down of those paradigms here on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Freedom Fiends, yes. I am Nima Vidati representing Austin, Texas. I don't know if I'm representing anybody really but myself, but I am in Austin, Texas, speaking into an Electro Voice RE320. Doesn't that sound nice? We've also got Michael W. Dean out there representing himself in Wyoming in his bunker that has no windows.
It actually has a lot of windows. And like Lou said, if you really want to have windowless bunkers, go to Detroit because all the windows are broken there.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what you meant by windowless, but...
No, I was pretending I was in a big box underground, but I'm actually in a really nice room in a brick house looking out a window at a bunch of squirrels and birds and doves and... Birds and doves.
Birds and doves, both?
Birds and
okay,
doves.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
the old bird and dove.
That's good that you've got the whole bird thing going on there. We've also got Amanda Billy Rock. Is that like a stage name or is that really your last name, Amanda?
It's an internet name.
You're an actor,
an
right?
Internet name.
Aren't you an actor, a stage actor, stage and screen?
Well, she would be an actress, I think.
I did used to do the acting thing. Yes, I did.
Nima said that's an actress. As a film director, I generally call the person an actor, even if they're a female. What do you think?
I also use the term actor Nima. But just because it's easier to say.
Nima's sexist.
Actress sounds, I think it sounds better.
It sounds derivative and diminutive of the male.
I don't know about that. It's just kind of hard to say.
I like actor.
Actress.
Actor. What kind of actoring have you done? And where can people see you?
Well, I did community theater growing up. That was super big in Utah, as you can imagine. And then when I was 19, I moved to Hollywood and I did a theater program in Hollywood. And then I started doing some short films, wrote, directed and starred in my own short film. And then that's when the awakening happened, the Ron Paul awakening, if you will. And so I totally shifted gears after that and left the acting behind.
What was your path to liberty? And did your family play a part in it or did they stand in your way? Or are they supportive? And how'd you get here?
Well, it happened in Hollywood. I just remember hearing so much about how the economy was bad. And I just remember thinking, what does that even mean? You know, that's... I'm an adult and I don't know what that means. Like, how can economies go bad? Like, are they like fruit? Like, if you don't, you know, don't put them in the fridge or you leave them out too long, they're going to go bad. You know, it just sounded like so bunk to me or whatever, but I thought I should at least know what this means because I'm an adult and I'm supposed to be fully functional. So I just went to the local library there in Silver Lake, near Hollywood, and I just started reading books about economics, and some made sense and some didn't.
Is that the library on Echo Park Boulevard at Sunset, or a block, half block down?
I think quite possibly yes. You know what I'm talking about.
You know that library has my books.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I used to live at Coronado and Sunset.
Okay.
And I talked to the librarian there, and she ordered my books. I have spent a lot of time in that library. You ever go to the Echo Park Film Center right up the street?
I did not go to that, no.
Really? There was a little storefront community filmmaking school that was free, that was like funded voluntarily by a really cool guy, like a leftist anarchist guy named Paolo, who taught kids from the hood how to make films. And I used to speak there and help teach there.
You and I have walked the same path.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it was next door to the Downbeat Cafe. You ever go to the Downbeat Cafe?
No, I was a super broke student. I didn't go places that required the green.
Well, the library doesn't require the green, but the Echo Park Film Center also doesn't require the green. And you would have loved it, probably. It was kind of like right up our alley. And it was right up the alley from the library. Literally.
Ho-ho.
Well, now you tell her that she's thousands of miles away.
I guess they need a better ad campaign. They need to put up flyers or something.
There you go. They need government-funded PSAs. So right? what books were it that sort of hit you in the chest with the brick of anarchy? Was it Economics in One Lesson? I know you do little short pieces on that I've seen on your blog. Was it Henry Hazlitt or Murray Rothbard or who?
Well, the first book was Radicals for Capitalism, and that was the first mention of the word libertarian I had ever heard. And so it was when I Googled libertarian that Ron Paul's cute face came up, and that was really that was my first exposure to him. I remember when he came up in the Google search, I said, I remembered there was a banner draped over the freeway in 2008 that said Ron Paul. I bet that's this guy. And then you had asked about my family's reaction to the whole thing, and you know, that is varied in the spectrum. I come from a big family, and I have two sisters who have become anarchist along with me. They kind of picked up when I started getting super excited about things. And then my mom she doesn't like the A word, understandably, you know. but if you don't call it the A word, she is that. And then it's my dad I'm still working on.
What is it that your dad is stuck to? Because everybody has their own status security blanket that they kind of cling to for a while. For some people, it's police. For some people, it's national security. For some people, it's social welfare. What's your dad's hang-up?
He believes that the military is making people's lives better around the world.
And that's his wet blanket.
His
yes.
wet blanket. Yes.
So, do you think Ron Paul is attractive? And do a lot of young ladies think that Ron Paul's attractive? You said he had a cute face.
In the way that you think that your very favorite person is attractive, it's just they're so awesome. And what is that phrase? Something like love is recognizing virtue in another person. He's just so virtuous.
That's hot.
Jeez.
I'm not insinuating this about you, but I've heard young pretty ladies say I like him that way, and I'm like, really?
I didn't think it was dirty like that. I thought it was
I didn't either. I was just checking if she's ever encountered other people who feel that way about the way I'm talking about him.
I haven't, and I wouldn't say that I'm in that club.
Yeah,
either.
I didn't think you were. But he does have groupies, which is kind of weird because he's about 107, I think. Isn't he?
I think he's either 77 and about to turn 78 or 78. But yes, what's the difference?
So did you go past his beliefs? Like, was he a stepping stone? Did you go further than him?
You know, The question of is Ron Paul an anarchist is a hot topic question even now, I think. And I know there was an article about that on LouRockwell.com, but I didn't read it. And so if Ron Paul is an anarchist, then he and I are still in step. And if not, then yeah, I guess I went a little past him.
Yeah. Well, we had predicted that when he retired from Congress, it was going to be his coming out moment. And he was going to say, hey, I'm an anarchist now. All this state stuff is ridiculous. I remember being a part of the state and it was silly. And here's why.
He almost hinted
at it with his farewell speech to Congress. It was kind of close, but I don't know if he's ever come out and explicitly said anything like that yet.
I think he basically conceded that you can't fix government was as far as he went. And that was his concession speech. He basically was saying, you're all wrong. I'm out of here, and then drop the mic, you know?
Yeah, I also tried to read into that speech, and you know, that almost seems to be his style, where he lays down the principle, but he doesn't draw an overarching conclusion for you. He gives you the information so that you can draw the correct conclusion.
Yeah, I think he's a great, important part of a lot of people's path to liberty. He's a much better. I don't like, you know, somebody said it well, like he's my favorite government thug, but he's still a government thug. He's more of a philosopher than a politician.
I find that he's like one of the three main ways that I have met people coming into the liberty movement. Usually it's either Ron Paul, Stefan Molyneux, or 9/11/Alex Jones.
Huh. With me, it's usually, with people I talk to, it's usually either Ron Paul, Alex Jones, or the Freedom Fiends. But that's, I have selection bias in that poll, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, what are you looking forward to in New Hampshire? What excites you most about this new path on your journey?
Well, I have to tell you how nervous I am, really, because there are so many Free Staters, and I hate forgetting a name. I feel so awful if I ever forget a name. And so everywhere I go, I'm like making mental notes and spelling people's names out in my mind. And I want to make a good impression on everybody so badly that I'm just too stressed out about it. I'm too stressed out. I'm too wound up. So I look forward to winding down, I guess, and just making as many friends as I can, because people here are so ridiculously nice.
Ridiculously nice. Give it time. I'm sure it is one of the nicest places to be on Earth, but I have moved places and thought it was perfect, and then it's like, yeah, stick around a while. You'll meet the one person. It may not probably not even be a Free Stater, but you'll end up not liking. I predict you may end up not liking one person at some point. That's life. That's life on this planet.
If and when that happens, can I come back on and tell you about what an awful person they are and shame them in public?
Yeah, go for it. I guess it depends on the person, though.
It depends how juicy of a story it is, and it depends if it's someone we really like.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Noted.
And let's switch gears completely here. You know Adam Kokesh, and he's in prison, and we wish he wasn't. Tell us an interesting story or something about Adam.
Well, I really got to – he really set an example for me, actually, because when I went to go live in the Adam versus the Man house in January of this year, I was co-hosting, and so I got to see kind of what the Kokesh does in a day. And I tell you what, that guy is so stinking smart, and I can't figure out when he's reading, because he is a very well-read individual, but I never saw him reading, and so he must do it in the middle of the night or something. And he's just liberty from morning until night.
Hmm. Maybe he has a brain implant that just kind of streams the information in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like I've told people, like, he's a total pain in the ass. Like, he's super bossy. He's a total alpha male. Like, more than one time I had to be like, hey, Adam, that thing you just asked me to do, like, that's extra work. That's not in my contract. I'm not going to do it. You know? And so I had to be assertive, but I look up to him very much, and it's awful that he's in a cage, and I don't know why he keeps going to them.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I want to know, too, and maybe we'll have some more insight into that from Amanda Billy Rock, our special guest out of New Hampshire now, when we get back from the market. Thank you for sticking with us, Freedom Fiends.
listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Yep, it's the Freedom Fiends. Welcome back to the bottom of hour one of our live Sunday, August 11th show. I am Nima Vidotti. We've also got Michael W. Dean. How are you doing there, Michael?
I am excellent. How's the weather today, Amanda Billy Rock? How is the weather today in New Hampshire?
It is breathtakingly beautiful.
Can you see mountains from where you are?
I don't know. I'm in a closet, so I don't know.
Yes. She can see clothes and blouses where she is.
Well, in the Bible, it says to go into the closet and pray, which basically means don't make a big scene out of it. Don't show off that you pray. So you can also do that when you do an interview on The Fiends. You can, like, go hide in the closet and just do your job, do it well, and you don't have to show it off. I like that.
Also, Good instincts, Amanda, for your sound conditioning. She said she couldn't find a good place for good audio, so she went into the closet, which I assume is full of clothes, which does some nice sound conditioning so she doesn't sound all reverby. And you sound great.
Well, thanks. You guys were being so uptight about the sound that I just did not want to be the one person who messed up her interview and never got called back again.
Come on, Nima. You know I'm such a macho audio flash guy that if we have somebody on the show and they say they're in the closet doing the interview, you got to know that I suggested it weeks ago.
Okay. Well, now I was trying
to... Closet.
Yes, I was throwing a bone for Amanda, but fair enough.
Speaking of stellar audio, Adam Kokesh. We were talking about Adam Kokesh. More about him, please.
Before the jump, Amanda had said she just can't figure out why he keeps going to the cage. Do you feel like, I mean, did he hint at that? Was that kind of a goal? Is this I'm going to be a political prisoner and that's going to help to show people the ridiculousness of these people who are caging me? Was that where it's coming at, or was this kind of just an accident?
You know, we didn't even chat very much outside of the 3-hour nightly podcast. He's a very serious person, or at least he was around me, like super serious, almost withdrawn in a way. And so I wish I could give you more juicy details about his personality and plans, but I just don't have them. I did, which you maybe heard if you watched my Porkfest speech on YouTube. I did agree to go on his show because in a moment of impulsion, I thought that he and I maybe should get married. But as I talked about in my speech, alpha males in that regard are just not my type. And so our marriage was doomed from the get-go.
Well, isn't it the alpha male in him that maybe made you see a video of him and said, I want to make babies with this? Or was it something else? I mean, it's unusual. I think it's unusual to see a video of somebody and to decide without speaking to them, I think I might marry them.
I don't think that's unusual for young girls from Salt Lake at all, Michael.
You totally understand me, Nima. Thank you. No, it was the Liberty fight. I think I decided that I wanted to test out our possibilities for marriage after I saw his video where he's at the airport and he's getting people to guess how many terrorists the TSA had caught. And I have a horrible history with the TSA as well, so I thought, this freedom fighter, he might just be meant for me.
Well, a lot of people choose a mate consciously or subconsciously on the thought that the mate can protect them against some harm, you know, and it goes back to like saber-toothed tigers in our DNA. But maybe in this day and age, it's maybe he could protect me from the TSA and I feel threatened by them.
Hmm. Maybe there is a corner of my mind that was thinking that. That's a great hypothesis.
I don't want to psychoanalyze you because I get offended when I go on Stefan Molyneux's show and he does that to me. So I'm not going to do it to you. Not any okay. further than that.
Fair enough.
And I was kind of speaking in a general way about society, more making a comment on the TSA than on you and your desire to couple. Yeah.
So how was your tenure on Adam versus the Man podcast? Did you enjoy that? Did you leave on good terms? Well,
oh, totally.
I guess hold that thought. Hold that thought. Don't leave us on bad terms right now. Stick with us. We'll have more Amanda Billy Rock. After we attend the market, or after we make you attend the market, I guess.
You and, will attend listen, the market. This is the free market by force.
Yes, by force. Listen to the ads. Buy some stuff if your interest is piqued.
Or don't.
You know,
but do.
Or don't.
Do. Ah. We like it when you do. It's not force, but we like it when you buy from the advertisers.
Yes. Make a fiend happy today. Make a fiend happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Fiends.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's badquaker.com.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Okay, people, welcome back to hour two of Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. It's Sunday, August 11th. I am Nima Vadadi. We've also got Michael W. Dean
you
out
people.
There. Tell the folks where you at,
you
Mr. Michael. Where you at?
You people. I'm in Wyoming in a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America.
Excellent. And we have a third wheel here.
No.
Ms.
A third
Amanda
friend.
Billy Rock. A third friend. Three wheels is good. Tricycles are dope.
Third wheel means the person you don't want on the date. And we want her here today on our date with Nima and I dating each other, Nima.
Okay.
And I am down. In a windowless closet
she
in
really
Manchester,
is.
New Hampshire.
Yeah, she really is in a windowless bunker.
Manchester.
Yeah, so Adam Kokesh, tell us good things about the man. Give him some positive vibes while he's in jail. What's it like being around him?
It depends on whether or not the cameras and microphones are on, because this guy has this crazy ability to like be two different people. And that was what was one of the biggest shocks was about him for me. On the air, he is very talkative and very gregarious and super smiley. And then not on the air, he becomes quite serious and is actually almost stoic at times. And so, yeah, the many faces of Adam Kokesh, I was lucky enough to get to see them.
And you don't mean in a duplicitous way, right?
No, not at all. He's actually a fantastic performer.
Maybe he's just processing massive amounts of Liberty information in his downtime.
Well, and I wouldn't doubt it. Like I told you, he's so stinking smart. So he pulled out references from books and events and history, just things that I didn't know that much about. And I thought, when does this guy read all of this stuff?
Before that moment.
I guess, but before that moment is yeah. Exactly right. You've answered the question.
I stopped reading, for the most part, books a few years ago. I write books, but I don't have time to read books. But I've read enough books to know everything I need to know that I can't learn from. I mean, that kind of sounds like I know it all, but it's more like books kind of seem like dead language to me and something frozen in time. And conversation seems more like life to me.
Well, we have the ability to outsource our reading these days. So we listen to podcasts and radio shows, and sometimes those people have read things and they tell us what those things said.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'll buy that.
Yeah. Do you read a lot? Do you consume books?
I don't know that I would call myself straight bookish, but yeah, I do read a lot.
Now that you have an interest in guns, are you reading about guns or are you learning that through the language of people?
That would definitely be the language of people. Yeah, reading about guns seems like singing about dancing. I don't know. I don't see how those two go together.
Are you a gun person?
Well, I'm aspiring to be. I've been waiting to purchase one until I knew for sure where I was going to live, because I knew that Utah was a stopover between New Zealand and wherever I went next. So because I've landed here now, I'm currently working with one of my housemates to figure out what I should carry and how I should carry it and when we'll practice.
New Zealand. Wow. So Nima, you had a question?
Yeah. Well, first of all, reading about guns can be a lot of fun if you read Boston Tea Party. We'll throw a plug in for our friend over there. And he's actually got a great chapter in Boston's Gun Bible on women and guns that I found very enlightening and maybe you might find empowering. But I would suggest that it's kind of long, but it's interesting and is a good foundation for knowledge of guns if you're into it. But also, what are you thinking about right now? What is your housemate saying? Have you landed? Do you want a revolver? Do you want a semi-automatic pistol? Or what are you thinking?
We haven't gotten quite that into detail yet. He's recommended that I go shooting with the Second Amendment Sisters a few times to get a better feel. And then I think we'll pick up from there. But yes, there is a group called the Second Amendment Sisters, and I'm super excited to go meet with them.
Excellent. Now, why do you feel – I mean, okay. Were guns ever a part – did you ever even think about them before you were into Liberty? What has changed it to where you're actually going to think about starting to carry a weapon now?
Well, whenever I see a non-government employee carrying, be it, you know, concealed or open, I just feel so much safer. And the way a lot of people, if they meet a member of the military, will say, like, thank you or, like, thank you for your service. No, when I meet a civilian who's carrying, I say, thank you. Thank you for making me safer when I'm around you. And so I want to be one of those people who makes situations safer. And I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be powerless.
Excellent. Well, Salt Lake or Utah, at least, I mean, it's not anti-gun. I go back and visit every now and then, and you know, my friends there are kind of liberty oriented too, so they maybe I have some bias there, but people you know from back in the day, your friends, your family, do they know about this? Are they scared of guns? How what's the general consensus there amongst your old crew about you starting to carry a weapon?
Most of my people are rural in Utah, and even some of them are ranchers. And so everybody has guns. No one's sketched out by them. But not many of my people carry. And so that's going to be a new thing.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I – actually, Michael, our co-host there, he taught me pretty much how to carry. I had known intellectually the importance of self-defense and how it's a basic human – it's a basic animal right, not even a human right. But every animal has a method of defending itself, and guns seem to be the way to do that. And Michael told me, hey, you're a theorist. You know, let's go out shooting. Let's teach you how to shoot guns. Let's teach you how to hold guns. Let's teach you how to practice good gun safety and how to carry a gun. And I just remember it was such an empowering feeling to know that, you know, I feel like part of the whole libertarian thing is self-responsibility. And in the end, not saying – not making somebody else responsible for your decisions, your actions, your safety, your well-being, not collectively. Devising it, not socializing those costs, but taking them on yourself and through your own human will deciding to do it. Is there an element of that in your desire?
I think so. You know, I mean, if the whatever hits the fan at any point, you know, you want to say, hey, I have a garden out back. Hey, I have guns. Hey, I have emergency food and water. Hey, I have, you know, ponchos and, you know, just things mm-hmm. that you need that, you know, in the glory of our living in highly devised, you know, a division of labor, we are able to rely on others so much for so many other things. And that's great. You know, that's how you achieve yeah. a high standard of living. But there does come a time when if the division of labor is not available to you, you want to be able to say, hey, I can take care of myself.
Well, what do you think about that? Do you think that there's something wrong with the division of labor when it comes to self-defense because of the state monopoly on things like, you know, police forces?
Of course. Of course. It's their monopoly on violence that makes it so the average person can't afford to hire a private police company, can't afford to hire a bodyguard. I mean, it's similar to the question of, well, how many people, if it weren't for property taxes and so many others, would be able to afford to send their kids to private school? I mean, how many parents do you honestly think would choose government school over private school? It's like not even a choice, but they're taxed out of their ability to pay for private school. It's the same with security. We're taxed out of our ability to pay for private security companies to patrol our houses.
Right, right. And that's another good point when it comes to fire protection. People like to point at libertarians and say, well, in your society, the fire department would come by and they'd see your house and they'd cross-reference it with their database and say, oh, he's not a paying customer. I'm not going to put it out. Well, maybe those people would have their own methods, maybe because of the fact that people would have more wealth to themselves rather than having it whisked away by the state. They might have their own internal sprinkler system in their residential home or other advanced technologies to prevent fire. Maybe they wouldn't even need something like what we think of as fire protection services these days.
Right. It's like getting stuck on the roads argument when, hey, without the state, we might have hovercraft or something we couldn't even, you know, imagine. Like, I'm waiting for teleportation, honestly. So let's not get stuck on the roads arguments when we realize, oh, wait a minute, roads aren't even that great. They're actually really unsafe. And the most common way to die is in a car accident.
They're also already they're already built, too.
Yeah, that's what
too,
we say, too.
It?
Yeah. Well, hey, we'll take it from here. Thanks for building the road, state, but we don't need you anymore. Yeah, I think Walter Block says something like 40,000 people a year die on the United States road system. If any other institution in American society caused or was partially responsible at least for 40,000 deaths, wouldn't we take a deeper look at it? Wouldn't we try to be figuring out ways to change it? If it was some kind of private organization or society, wouldn't it be on the news every night? Wouldn't it be in people's minds of trying to solve the problem? But instead, because it's state administered, we don't think of it. We think, well, it's up to them, and there's city council meetings, and there's legislative meetings, and there's a Department of Transportation. Let's let our masters decide.
That's the thing about monopolized industries. They never evolve. Think about it. The only difference between mail delivery in the 1800s and now is that now they use little vans instead of little horses. Other than that, mail delivery right. is exactly the same. There is no evolution in monopoly.
Right.
And they
because
try,
they don't have an incentive.
They try to make a monopoly, too. It's illegal to send a letter cheaper, you know, to deliver a letter cheaper than the Postal Service does it. And when email first came out, there was a really serious effort at putting forth a bill to tax every email to pay the post office for the lost revenue. That's ridiculous. That's like saying, you know, cars are here. We must pay horse and buggy whip manufacturers 10 cents on every car sold because buggy whips won't be as well as widely produced.
You know what I think is really interesting? The Constitution, which is talking about, you know, like defense and general welfare and this and that and this and that, weirdly puts in this little itty bitty piece about post roads.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's right, what lets right. them have your name, your address, and have a government employee walk onto your front lawn legally every single day.
Where can people exactly. find you, Amanda? Where can people find you?
AmandaBillyRock.com. Amanda, and then, of course, Facebook and Twitter.
AmandaBillyRock.com.
Yes.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. This is Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yep. I'm Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. How's it going, sir?
You can slow down, man. I mean, I know that we're working to an atomic clock, but you can speak. You can talk. Yeah, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. So I want to talk about government guns that aren't even backed by the government. There's something I've noticed lately is I'm getting a lot of spam mail, a lot of snail mail that's spammy, and the envelope or the presentation makes it look like it's from the government, so you open it. Now, I may sound like an old man going, I don't like the mail I get. But I really feel like this is nearly a violation of the non-aggression principle, and it's always from car companies, which is interesting because didn't the U.S. just give $1 trillion to the car companies so they could bail them out and be, you know, have a good industry that works and have Detroit be shiny? And I guess the results are Detroit filing for bankruptcy and people trying to scare me like the government into buying cars. I am holding something here. I'm holding up to the microphone so everyone can see. It's a giant, glossy, four-color thing, and it's one of those car ads booklets that includes a key. There's a key on the back glued to it. That's not, it's not carved. Like, there's no etching, you know, no ridges in it. It's not a real key. It's a key blank.
Right.
But it says, Michael, your key could be the lucky one. Play the all-new $25,000 scratch-off Monopoly. Now, I'm probably going to have to scratch this off live on air to prove that I will win. I'm sure everyone wins, and then you come in and you they scam you somehow. But the front of this thing is a giant – it's mostly red text in giant letters. I mean, this thing is like one and three quarters the size of a legal piece of paper. It's a super legal piece of paper, an illegal piece of paper. And it says, attention, all U.S. citizens. And it's got like a gavel, a judge's gavel hitting something. And it says, nationwide order to liquidate vehicles has been released. When I saw this, I thought, and this is what I think they want me to think, it looks like Adolf Hitler is declaring all cars have been nationalized and we're taking your vehicle. And it says, justice has been served. And it looks like it's saying, we're taking all cars, so as a car owner, you better read this. And then you look at it, and it's just zero down, $199 a month. Go into debt for the rest of your life to the New World Order. You know, all these shiny cars that no one can afford, but we already paid for by giving them $1 trillion anyways. But, okay, that's Exhibit A, this thing that's scaring you into making it look like the government is seizing cars. And there's nothing about seizures in here. When they use the term liquidate and it says nationwide order to liquidate, it means, you know, some marketing weenie at this company gave a nationwide memo to his salesman saying, sell more cars.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then there's another thing I'm getting from a local car business that looks like it's from the IRS. It's not big like this. It's a standard size envelope. And the text on it is in that Courier or Arial font, whatever. No, Times. I forgot.
Helvetica.
Helvetica. Thank you. The mm-hmm. states. Yeah. The state font. It's in that square, monospaced Helvetica that the yeah. IRS uses, and it says like, you know, nationwide alert center, you know, something Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington D.C. Like it's basically yeah. a mailbox drop down the street from the White House.
Yeah.
And I look at, I saw this thing and I'm like, what is the IRS sending me? And I opened it and it was like, come down to Casper Cars and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I can't yeah. say on the radio what I thought, but
yeah.
it really
yeah.
irked me, man. And they're basically, both of these things are people, advertisers thinking, well, nobody reads our mail anymore and they throw it away. And we are the only reason the post office still exists. I wonder yes. if the post office like encourages this or at least allows it
yes.
because
they have workshops. Make it sound like state violence so people yeah. will open your mail.
Probably not, but somebody has those workshops. Maybe not the government, but somebody somewhere yeah. is training people to do this. And it's some
marketing weenie, as you said.
You know, it borders on fraud. It really does, because it looks like if you don't open this, we're going to steal your stuff or you're going to owe lots of money and go to jail and get raped. So that's what it's come to, folks, is when they have a product they can't sell, they have to pretend. You know, they say yeah. government ideas so good, you have to be forced to comply with them. Well, now that's reaching the free market and the not so free market and stuff people wouldn't buy anyway. So they have to scare you into thinking the government is going to get you.
Well, it's pseudo fraud, and maybe it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle, the NAP, but I think it does violate what a funny new acronym that Stefan Molyneux coined, I think it was a few months ago, called the YAD, and I won't say what it is, but tune in for the Wednesday recorded podcast, and we'll go into the YAD, which these things do violate, and also join us after the market. We'll have plenty more Freedom Fiends coming up.
The market with no guns to your head. The true free market on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Not your dad's talk radio.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends. I'm Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. And we are continuing our Sunday live show. It is August yeah. 11th, 2013. And we're going to take a little jump to the chat room. So you can contact us several ways. You know that we have our chat room. You can get through from freedomfiends.com. You can also email us at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
We're actually a call-in show, but we never give out the number because because phone calls don't sound very good, basically.
Well, yeah, and today we did have
a guest.
Somebody try to call in earlier, but we have a guest, and so when you have more than three people on a radio show,
yeah.
it's hard to tell who's who. Sometimes it's even hard with three people. Yeah,
it's a mess if you get four people on, and you tend to get like feedback of this through that, and people don't have their radio down.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's we generally do not take calls when we have a guest on, but we had Amanda Billy Rock on, and it was really good, and we liked it. And
Billy rocked it.
I was gonna make a joke on her name in the title of this when we put it up in the archives later, but you know, I'll bet it's been done to death, and I'm not gonna call this episode
death.
Amanda Billy Rocks the Fiends or anything like that. I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna resist the temptation to be trite and common and go the little bit extra bit
common
that makes
yes.
it fiends. Common.
You took that as such an insult when she said that's a very common question. You were like, yes, well, I am common.
I was about to say I was half kidding, but I'm not. I like most humans, fancy myself as being rather uncommon. You know, I want to talk about the rapper named Common. Because the TV show, this wonderful TV show called Hell on Wheels just started. Heck on Wheels. We'll make it radio friendly. Heck on Wheels. Yes. Hell on Wheels just started back up, the new season yesterday. They had a 2-hour extravaganza. And it was mind blowing. And Nemo missed it because he doesn't have a TV. But he will. He'll see it somehow when it gets to the tubes or the Netflix.
I have a TV. I don't pay for cable TV
service. No, man, you shot your TV. We filmed it and put it in the Guns N' Weed movie.
Whose TV was that that we shot in the Guns N' Weed movie?
I can't say because there was a picture of it in the newspaper in an article about how we need to clean up the trash on the state land where people shoot. So I don't know. I don't know. I didn't shoot that TV. An older boy told me to do it. I don't know.
An older boy, yes. You always listen to the older boys?
Yeah. So
only if they... Yeah, okay.
So Common, there's a rapper named Common who is a character. He plays a freed slave who carries a gun and is basically... He's a good guy. He's one of the heroes. On this show, Hell on Wheels, which takes place right after the Civil War, and it's about the tent city that traveled with the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. And it was kind of a really rough and tumble, you know, somewhere between like libpear and chaos, you know.
Yeah.
Like what a lot of people would say, anarchy. But yeah, there wasn't really anarchy because there were people acting like the government. And it was kind of chaotic, which people say is anarchy, but we say is not. And it was somewhere between libertarian paradise and a violent chaos, but it's you know, that makes for good TV. But I want to talk a little bit about the rapper Common, who was invited by Dear Leader Obama to speak at the White House and do a poetry slam or something ridiculous, which I don't know and I don't care. But you know, people like Bill O'Reilly really took him to task for that. Like, oh my gosh, he has a rapper who wrote a song about that cop killer. And like, and you know, if the worst thing you can say about a bloodthirsty tyrant is he had some entertainment at his house that you find unsavory, man, Bill O'Reilly, you are not trying hard enough. That's go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like you have to be really ignorant of hip hop to buy Bill O'Reilly's rant in the first place. Because if you know anything about hip hop, Common is not a gangster rapper.
Yeah.
Common is sort of the figurehead.
Conscious rapper.
Yes. Yeah. Of a subgenre called conscious, which is basically socially conscious and talks about issues and tries to do it intelligently. It's not bang, 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 grabbing my lady's private parts kind of a thing at all. And so if he was rapping about somebody that Bill O'Reilly called a cop killer, it was probably somebody that got killed by cops.
Or shot back in self-defense when the cops shot him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So as with everything Bill O'Reilly says, it's stupid.
So while we're talking about wonderful TV and the TV that's going to save TV, Breaking Bad season next, the last episodes, the second half of the season 5 starts up tonight. And I guess we can talk about what's come to up to now without it really being a what do you call it? I always call it a deal breaker.
Spoiler.
Yeah, I don't think we need a spoiler alert of something that like everyone's been consuming the minute it comes out, and the last episode came out like 9 months ago. So,
well, I'm still not completely up to date. There's that one last episode, episode 8 of season 5. I haven't seen. So be conscious of that.
I will respect you, but not everyone else. So we'll only we'll only talk about up to that. What'd you think of season 5 up to the second to the last episode?
Well, first of all, it's just amazing TV. If you're not into it, please try to get into it. It is just wonderful, and it's a great – it's got that old – I guess it's an old story, but it's done so well, and it's so modern, and it so explains a lot of the problems with modern America in the fact that Walt is on a mission. You know, he says in the new season he's not in the business of the meth business or in the money business. He says, I'm in the empire business. And it's this hubris that is the cause of Walt's fall. You know, at a point he gets offered $5 million and he can stop. That's the deal. He'll stop cooking the meth. He can have $5 million. His wife would probably be very happy. You know, part of the subplot is his wife feels like a hostage. She doesn't feel like it's a partnership anymore. He could get his kids back because his wife has removed his kids from the house. All he has to do is stop. But he is so obsessed with success. And here's, I think, where there's the libertarian angle is that success it could be afforded to him without all of these problems that are burdening him. The problems of his kids having to be somewhere else, the problem of his wife feeling like a hostage. It's all because of the drug war. It's all because he has to be wary of the other players in the drug game and also the state and his own brother-in-law, you know, who's now the head of the DEA.
Who now knows that his brother-in-law is the guy he's been searching for the whole time. The DEA guy now knows.
Heisenberg.
Yeah.
Yes.
He realizes that. And that's not a spoiler alert because you've had 9 months to catch up on all this. But what I will say, too, you're blaming the drug war on this. Without the drug war, Walt wouldn't have this high-paying illegal job. Walt would probably be working in a pharmaceutical company making crystal meth that sold at Walmart in bulk, but hopefully not in the same aisle as the sugar.
Well, that's the thing, is he has an amazing skill, and he says that when he meets with another drug gang, I guess from Phoenix, is it? Some other big city in the Southwest.
Yeah.
And he, you know, the guy say, well, what's to stop us from killing you in the desert right now and keeping the money and taking the meth precursor? And Walt says, because I can do something nobody else in the world can. I can make the highest potency meth ever seen in the world. I think Walt may still be the guy to have done that, sans the drug war, in some type of market system. And I think he would be compensated for it accordingly, especially if he had the same entrepreneurial spirit that he has now. He would be able to have, you know, Heisenberg's amazing quality meth sold on every corner
and
store.
He says, say my name, say my name. Say you my know name. Who I am. Yes.
Like it's like Beyonce or something.
Like, yeah, baby, say my name. Yeah, I don't know, though. I think that it's kind of a MacGuffin in that show that they've made his formula so magical because, Jesse, who's basically chemically retarded but has just been in the room assisting all this time, is taken down to Mexico at one point, basically at gunpoint, to be forced to teach the Mexican cartel the formula. And he can do it almost, you know, I mean, he does like 96% or something. He doesn't get the 99.1 that Walt does, but he's working in a really grungy lab. And a lot of what he does that ends up making it that potent is just basically says, we're going to clean the hell out of all this equipment because you don't do that. It's kind of like I spent $35,000 of Warner Brothers money when we hired Bill Laswell to produce our record for the one record we did on Warner Brothers. And all I walked away with from that whole experience and basically all he didn't do any producing. Basically what he did was he said he had a good studio and he had a good collection of engineers and assistants. Basically, all I learned from that I took away from that was tune your guitar and your bass before every single take with the tuner. And that's all I learned. And that cost me $35,000. And that's all Jesse really brought to the table was we're going to scrub the heck out of all these big vats because you don't do it well enough. And that's basically like tuning your guitar before every take, you know? I mean, of all the things Walt could do, I mean, Walt was involved in like world changing science in his legitimate job that he left. And he's going to like make this chemical that is made, you know, is simpler than chemicals that are made every day millions of times over in different industrial labs around the country. You know, it's not rocket science. It's just basic chemistry. And he just has a really high quality control ideology behind it. And most people that make crank for street users who will buy anything and shove up their nose or in their arm don't care.
They're gonna do it quick and dirty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think Walt's the magician. You know, it's more about his business acumen than it is about his chemistry, really.
Yeah, and his ability to get out from situations where his back is against the wall and he's about to die, and he's quick at thinking on his feet. But one other motif in the show that really resonates with me is he doesn't really have a guiding principle, or he justifies breaking his own moral code because it's what he has to do to protect his family or protect himself or protect the business. And he says that makes me a good person. You know, it doesn't make me a bad person just because I'm protecting my family when I killed that guy. And he always says, oh, it'll never happen again. It'll never happen again.
Well, he's so past that line though, because at this point in the series, he has more money than his family could spend in 10 lifetimes living really well. And he's just into the power of it. And
he's already crossed that line. That's the thing, is once you break the principle and you're able to mentally justify it, then you're going to continue to do it. It's kind of like when you're in college and you show up late for that class one day, and then for the rest of the semester, you're there 15 minutes late every day because, like, I can sleep in. Nothing bad's going to happen.
It's inertia. And he says that. He uses that term at one point. He uses the basic, you know, grade school physics word of inertia. That's what keeps him doing this.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I hope it doesn't come on at the same time as The Newsroom, because I'm very interested in that show. That's good TV, too. I don't know, because, you know, the way that cable services work in Wyoming is, like, you look online, and there's all this stuff about, buy our service, and there's really nothing that accurately portrays what's on what channel at what time.
Yeah. I kind of feel like what needs to happen is shows that are like that are on TV and are produced an episode at a time and do follow that old model of Tuesday at 8 p.m. prime time, the next episode.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to come up with a good way of getting that to us. Even if it's a day late, like some shows on Hulu, I feel like we need something like that for Breaking Bad. Maybe we do. If you know of something, let us know. Talkback@freedomfiends.com. We'll have more Freedom Fiends after the market.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
It's Fiends.
Yes. It's the Fiends. Yes.
Yes. Why don't you bring us back, Michael?
Well, normally we'd be doing our tweak and review right now, but we did an interview and it was really free form. And I don't know if there's really any bullet points in a free form interview. It just kind of happens and it's groovy and then it's gone and you go,
yeah,
wow, I wish there was more of that. But what happened? I don't know. It's kind of like free form jazz. Yeah. You know, it's great. And you're like, yeah, man, this is the coolest stuff I've ever heard. And then you're like, hum one of the melodies. And you're like, I don't know. Yeah, so we're just going to talk up until they kick us off the radio with the giant radio drone that's going to take over everything pretty soon. You know, there's satellite internet now. Like, basically, for not that much more than cable internet in your home, you can get internet anywhere in North America, like rural Wyoming, which is good. But it's got like a lot of latency, so you couldn't really do live radio over it yet. What I would like to see is, you know, the gradual or the stud, just the state just saying, nobody loves me, and just melting like the witch in Wizard of Oz. And then all of these drones being sold off in military surplus stores, and all the NSA computers being wiped clean and sold in military surplus stores. And these drones could be used for internet, you know, because they hover a lot closer than satellites. So the latency would be acceptable for doing radio. So that's what we need is internet,
like that.
Drone radio. That's what
drone-based internet.
Where do I vote for that candidate?
With your money, you invest in a drone-based internet company.
Yeah.
And if nobody started one, you try to get somebody to start one, or you start one yourself.
And you can't really vote for that, because as the Fiends say, voting for less government is like drinking for sobriety.
Yeah, not the best of ideas.
So you had some thoughts on media production.
Yeah, man.
Or dissemination.
So I want to watch Hell on Wheels, and I want to watch the new Breaking Bad. But it's going to be more difficult for me than watching the older episodes, because not all put on Netflix yet. I don't know if Hulu does those few. You know, some shows I can watch like as they come out, like New Girl I watch on Hulu, which I love, by the way. I don't know if that's a guilty pleasure or not, but I kind of got a thing for Zooey Deschanel.
I don't know what that is. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, you should learn about it, but maybe it's too young. young for you.
The reason Hulu doesn't do the thing that would make sense, or Netflix doesn't do the thing that would make sense, which is put the episode of the cool show on the day after it goes up. Now, they'll do that with network TV. They'll do that with Parks and Rec.
Right.
But, you know, that stuff that's kind of okay, but it's not the kind of stuff where you rearrange your life to see it the way you do the new Breaking Bad or the new Hell on Wheels or, you know, any of those shows. And the reason they don't do it is because people would stop watching TV. So the TV companies would not license it to them.
The thing is, people are stopping watching TV anyway. So why don't they just get with the times and try to position themselves better for what the future is? You know, one of the things I'm coming to find out through being a cable guy for the past 2 months is, a big majority of my jobs have been internet only or downgrading people to where they used to have TV, phone, and internet, and now they're just going to have internet. And when you do that, there's a filter you put on the line, and we call it a trap, a high-speed data trap, and that keeps the people from getting the TV signal coming through the cable to where they only get the internet data signal. And those were in such demand that they were on back order for, I think, a month in our area. Nobody could get them. The manufacturer couldn't make them fast enough.
I had one that somebody could have had, but the other day I had a guy come over to fix something on my internet and put in a new modem, and he's like, oh, with this new modem, you don't need the filter. And he unscrewed it from the back of the modem and put it in his pocket and then put the new modem on, which actually had faster internet now. And I just kind of assumed it was like a little NSA keylogger and he has to go turn it in. That's really across my mind.
Well, it might have been something different. I mean, everybody does different things in different areas, even if it's the same company. They have different equipment, different traps, different filters. But yeah, if it was truly the kind of filter that filters out the TV signal so you can't get it because you're not paying for it, it'd be really dumb of them to put it inside of your house on your modem. You know?
Well, you know, it reminded me in Breaking Bad of when Walt is, you know, puts a keylogger on his brother-in-law's computer at the DEA. And then I just figured it was the other way around. I figured it was the government taking my full keylogger in for analysis. And it's been a good Freedom Feed today, Nima.
Yeah, yeah, it has. And join us on Wednesday for the recorded show. I guess you don't have to join us, but download it and listen to it.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about the YAD principle. And also, I think we might talk about some critiques of Appleseed and the way they train. So it should be a good show.
Good critiques. We like them.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.